Josh. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Shear. I'd like to remind everybody, please, to turn off their phones. I'd like to thank our sponsors for today's Shear, the Shear in for the year, are sponsored anonymously. Le'ilu Nishmai Selig Ben Kalman and Brana Bras Branded. We're very grateful for that sponsorship. Okay, we have a roller coaster ride today. Some really interesting topics. And some slightly unusual ones. I apologize in advance for the slightly unusual nature of some of the sources today. But, you know, the Gemara deals with everything. Everything and everything. So last week we started to look at this extremely sensitive topic of posthumous sperm retrieval from young men, usually soldiers who've fallen in battle, and I, as I mentioned, hundreds, literally, of soldiers have had their sperm removed and retrieved over the last couple of years with a possibility of them using that to produce a child at some point. In some cases, there's a widow with no children. In some cases, there's a widow with other children. In some cases, there's no widow, but there's a long-standing girlfriend. Or if a single man, there are parents who are interested in doing this. We talked about this last week. And we started off last week with a general principle that some poskim put forward, which is, well, if there's no halachic reason to prohibit it, then it must be permitted. The assumption is that things are permitted until there's a good reason why they're not. We saw that Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg pushed that very strongly. It's based on a Mishnah in Yadayim. And therefore, we looked last week at what could be some of the reasons why this really could be prohibitive. We looked at Nivul Hametz. To what extent are you allowed to interfere with a corpse and mutilate, even for positive reasons, a corpse? Yes, for Pikuach Nefesh, sure. But this is not Pikuach Nefesh. Is it okay? And it depends on the procedure involved. What about the issue of benefiting from a corpse? Is this called a benefit? We also talked about the question of who might own these samples going forward. Is it the wife? Is it the parents? And we looked a little bit at the issue of consent. To what extent do the express explicit wishes of the soldier or the person involved, the man involved, because of course it's not just soldiers, also people who've been sick who've had that procedure done. To what extent does their consent make a big difference in halacha? Today, I would like to look at four or five other issues, which will be, I think, very interesting. The first one is, is the child produced by this procedure really the child of the donor of the sperm? Now, you might say, well, obviously it is. Well, who else's child could it be? And the answer is correct. It couldn't be anybody else's child. There is no doubt as to the possible contenders for who is the parent, who is the father. But the question is this enough of a connection with the father or the donor of the sperm, let's say, to create parenthood? Unless you say, well, of course, he's the biological parent. You and I know that biological parenthood doesn't necessarily create halachic parenthood, or indeed legal parenthood. Even lahavdil in modern law, somebody can adopt a child and become the legal parent of that child in American law, British law, but not be the biological parent of the child. So too in halacha, a famous case of a ger, someone who converts to Judaism, may have biological parents who are non-Jews, but they're not their halachic parents at all. Even if the parents convert to Judaism, and they all convert, one happy family, Roger and Christine and Patrick and Mary, their kids, all convert to Judaism, and now there's Reuven and Hananiah and Pinchas and whatever, none of them are related to each other, not one of them. On a Torah level, they could all marry each other, parents, children, da-da-da-da. We don't obviously allow that, but they're not related. So too, just because somebody is the biological provider of the sperm, does that mean they're halachically the parent? Even if they are halachically the parent, did they do the mitzvah of Peru Ravu? Now, why is that important? Because when we're trying to analyze why might it be justified to intervene and take this sample and produce a child, the existence of a mitzvah is obviously relevant. It might not be the same as pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh overrides almost everything, whereas a mitzvah is not a justification for doing something which is an aveira. On the contrary, it's usually what's called mitzvah haba ba'aveira, and we'll talk about that. Nevertheless, if there is a mitzvah here, that's going to be very important. Then we're going to look a little bit at the issue of yibum. To what extent is this whole procedure like a kind of in the spirit of yibum? And then we'll look at some of the general ethical questions of producing a planned orphan. is that itself a problem? We'll have a look at that today. So let's start in source number one and look at the question of artificial conception insemination. Does the Gemara talk about the status of a child produced by artificial insemination? And the answer is, yes, it does, even though this was not a normal or regular procedure. Look at the following case. Number one, says the Gemara, Shalu et ben Zoma. They asked ben Zoma the following question. Betula she'ibra, a virgin who is pregnant. Mahu le kohen gadol. Can she marry the kohen gadol? Now, how do you get a case of a pregnant virgin? A woman who is a virgin, who has never had a relationship sexually, should not be pregnant. And if she says that she still is a betula, then most of the time we'd say, well, I think that you're not telling us the entire story. What's that? Unless they're Christian, okay. And we'll talk a little bit, about that. So the Gemara says, no, it could actually be that she is a betula, and she's still pregnant. Now, we know a Kohen Gadol is only allowed to marry a betula. But she might be, but she's still pregnant. How? Says the Gemara. Michashinan l'deshmul. Are we concerned that what might have happened here is the case of Shmuel? What's the case of Shmuel? The Amar Shmuel, because Shmuel, the Amora, not the prophet, the Amora, says, Yachal ani liv oil kama be'ilois, beloy dam. He had a way, I'm not getting into all of the anatomical possibilities, of having a sexual relationship with a woman without disturbing her virginity, her betulim. And there could be a case, maybe she'd slept with a man who could do this, and therefore she had indeed slept with a man, and she was not able to marry the Kohen Gadol, but for whatever technical reasons that didn't disturb her betulim. Or Dilma de Shmuel lo shchicha, or maybe we're not worried about someone who might have been able to do this. You know, one in a million people could do this. Who could do this? Says the Gemara, no, maybe de Shmuel lo shchicha. We're not worried about that. She's not likely to have had a relationship with a man who could do this very unusual thing. The Chayshinan, but we are worried, Shema Ba'ambati Ibra. Maybe she became pregnant through a bath. Says Rashi, Yesh Loma, because what could have happened is, Shehitiach Sham Adam Shichvat Zera, a man might have deposited Shichvat Zera, sperm, for whatever reason, in that bath. The Nichnas B'meyeha, and then she innocently uses the bath afterwards, and she gets pregnant from this sperm. Is this physiologically possible? Yes, but very, very, very unlikely. A woman who says, I'm pregnant, but it's from a bath, not likely to stand up in court. But it is possible. And the Gemara says, since this is possible, maybe we take this seriously. On the basis of that case, we'll see soon that this is actually based on a story which is brought down about Yirmiyahu Hanavi, which we'll see in a minute. And we are going to see that actually, even though this sperm was deposited by some unknown male, we are going to say that he is the father of the child. Now, this young woman actually can marry a Kohen Gadol because she is pregnant, as it were, by accident, and she didn't have a relationship with anybody else. But this is the case brought in the Gemara of, if you like, the artificial insemination. And we'll see soon that paternity is established through that, according to most poskim. Not all, most. Look at number two. This is brought into a more sort of modern case, where the Bach brings down on the Torah the following question. Matzati b'hagot smak. He brings down from the Sefer Mitzvah Katan, from the Middle Ages, Marenu Harav Peretz, one of the Balei HaTosfot. So we're talking, the Bach himself is in the 16th century, the smak is in the 13th century. Shekasov, he writes the following warning. Isha nida, a woman who is nida, yichola lishkov asadini ba'ala. She's allowed to sleep on the sheets of her husband. Now, they might be sheets that were used, and they might have had a marital relationship, and they may be some zera, some semen on the sheets. But we're not worried about her becoming pregnant, even though she might become pregnant this way. That's not called a relationship. She didn't have a relationship when she was nida. That was an accident, and there's no problem there. Even if that were to happen, highly, highly unlikely, but even though it's still possible, but we're not worried about that. She can do that. The nizharot, but the women are concerned and are warned. Misadini sheshachav aleihem ish acher. But if she goes to a hotel, I'm sure hygiene standards were not what they should have been. And there's a bed sheet that's been used by another man in a relationship that he had with a woman, and there might be some kind of shichvat zera on the sheet. And here she is, an innocent woman sitting on the sheet, not her husband. Pen titaber, she might get pregnant. Second line. Mishichvat zera shel acher. So the Gemara here says that the Amai ain't chosheshish pentita beb nidato. Why aren't we worried if she's a nida with her own husband? Now, that's also not good. And you might argue that the child might have some kind of stigma that he was born from a mother who had not been to the mikvah. I'm not getting into that now. And the answer is, Kevin she'ein kan biat isur, there is no relationship, there's no physical relationship going on here. Havlat kosher legamri, there is no problem with the child. And by the way, later on, Rav Moshe Feinstein passed us this way, that if there is no physical intimacy, there is no stigma or problem with the child. In an artificial insemination, a woman could be inseminated from her husband's sperm even when she's a nida in a hospital procedure. The child has no stigma. She could even be inseminated by artificial insemination by a donor. And the Rav Moshe has a very famous landmark tshuva where there was a woman, a family, where the husband was unable to fertilize a child. The only way they could raise a family was by AID. She had to have a sperm donation. And Rav Moshe says, since there's no physical intimacy or relationship, it's halachically permitted. This was a very interesting tshuva because a lot of people got very unhappy. Very upset with Rav Moshe, including many of the poskim who were more on the machmir side, and Rav Yaakov Breisch, you say Satmik, could be. I know Rav Yaakov Breisch from Switzerland wrote a response to Rav Moshe, who said this is a disgrace that we are allowing Jewish families to be made by AID. He said even the Catholics don't allow this. And Rav Moshe wrote back this very famous letter. Says like, Maich patli the Katolikim. You know, why do I care what the Catholics allow? And he writes, I believe in Torah and only Torah, and Torah is everything. And you read this out of context, the statement, I believe in Torah and Torah is our lives. And you think he's talking to, I don't know, the Reform Temple up the road. He's talking to a Hasidic Posik from Switzerland, saying that, of course, this is not the ideal way to create a Jewish family, but this family is not in an ideal situation and it's permitted. So the Bach says, yes, there's no relationship. We're not worried about the child being some kind of stigma because there is no intimacy. However, even if she gets third line, or still a number two, even if she becomes pregnant from the sperm of somebody else, it's still not a forbidden relationship. We're not worried that she's committed adultery, God forbid. And now he brings in the case. Halo ben Sira koshahaya. Ben Sira, we'll see who this was in a minute, was a kosher Jew, and he was a product of something like this. But if it's a sperm of another man, an unrelated man, Kapdinan, we are concerned there. Why? Avchana, we worry because we need to know whose child this is. Gezeira Shema Yisa Achote Mi Aviv Kidi Itza Biyavamis, because we're worried that even though it's unlikely, this child may be the child of a man she doesn't know, who she got pregnant from this thing on the sheets, and then this child will grow up and it'll get married to his half-sister, half-brother. They won't have a clue who their parents are, and therefore that we are worried about. And you see, by the way, from there, that there is paternity. This child is indeed the child of the sperm donor in this case. Because we're worried that they might get married to a half-sibling. So clearly there is paternity there. So all the sources are pointing in the direction that this is indeed the child, even though there was not a regular relationship. Go over the page. Let's have a look at Ben Sira. Who is Ben Sira? This is fascinating. Let's look from the Shulchan Aruch. Just talking very briefly about Pru Ravu. What happens if a person has a child who is a mamzer? A person has a relationship with a married woman, a man has a relationship with a married woman, he has a child, and it's a mamzer. It was a terrible prohibition on both their parts. But did he fulfill the mitzvah of Purur Ravu? He left a Jewish child in the world. Says the Ramah, Haya ben mamzer, kiyem a mitzvah. Okay, so he did the mitzvah of Purur Ravu. So then we get into a question. Says the Chalkas Mechokek, not so fast, in brackets in number three. The Yesh Liz Tafek, I have a question. Isha shinit abra ba'ambati. What if a woman got pregnant in a bath? We saw this just now. Im came hakima pruravu. Now we're asking a different question. Okay, maybe it's the father. Maybe not. But did he do a mitzvah? He left this in the bath. And now you're going to say, yeah, you baruch Hashem, you performed the mitzvah daraisa of pruravu. You left a child in the world. The im mikri benoy lachal davar. Is he really the son of that donor for all purposes, even for a mitzvah pruravu? Ubenikute maharil, he brings the maharil nimsashe, ben sira haya benoshal yirmiyahu. Ben sira, this second temple character, was the son of Jeremiah the priest. Sherachatz ba'ambati, and he'd been in a bath, Yirmiyahu, and had left his semen in the bath. We'll see what happened. Ki sira, and he'll prove it. One of the things they bring is the word sira is the gematria of Yirmiyahu. Now, what's going on? I'm not getting into this in too much depth, but it's very interesting. There is a book in the Apocrypha called Wisdom of Ben Sira. It's sometimes called the Ecclesiasticus, to be compared with Ecclesiastes, which is Kohelet. And there is a discussion, if you like, between the book of Ben Sira and Kohelet. And there's an academic debate as to whether they're in dialogue with each other to some degree. But what's interesting is this book of Ben Sira never made it into the Tanakh. It was too late. It made it into the Apocrypha, these kind of Twilight Zone books between, between, let's call it in Christian terms, the New and the Old Testaments, let's say. But certainly they didn't get into the Tanakh. But they are included by the Catholics in the canon. What's interesting about the book of Ben Sira is Ben Sira is quoted in Chazal, many places. And therefore Chazal clearly were aware of Ben Sira, took it very seriously. And actually the psukim from the book of Ben Sira are brought in a number of different contexts. Interestingly, this man Ben Sira, according to legend, was produced by this relationship that Yirmiyahu went to a bathhouse and for whatever reason was forced to leave semen in the bathhouse, and his own daughter, Yirmiyahu's daughter, came to the bathhouse, became pregnant, and then gave birth to Ben Sira, who was the son and the grandson of Yirmiyahu. Now, there are those who want to suggest that this whole story, which emerges in the time of the Gaonim, is part of the polemic against the virgin birth. There is a whole genre of literature called the Toldos Yeshu, where a lot of the stories about Yeshu Hanotzri, and when I was a kid, they call him Yoshke Pandera all the time. It was always Pandera. And they all comes from Toldos Yeshu. There is a suggestion that this is actually all a parody on this, virgin birth. And by the way, if you're interested in the difference between the virgin birth and the Immaculate Conception, I brought you a sort of note on that as well, just in case that's bothering you. Okay. Yes. Yes, it is interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
Zero.
Right, so look, you can look that up, and the Chalkis Mechoikek raises that and says, look, no one suggested that this man, who was the product of an incestuous relationship, he's the kosher Jew. He's not a mamzer, because artificial insemination doesn't create the same kind of relationships. Therefore, he raises a question as to whether it does indeed fulfill the Misra Puravu. I brought you a few other sources. I'm not getting into all of them. But bottom line, most of the Meforshim say that the product of an artificial insemination is definitely the father of the child. Whether it is Puravu, we'll see soon. But definitely there's paternity, according to almost all. Yes? Yes. Yes. No, the child will not be a Cohen if the donor is a Cohen. So that's a good question. I'm not sure about the answer to that question. If the sperm donor was a Cohen, would the child be a Cohen? That would be a strange. I don't know. If it establishes paternity, does it establish kahuna in the shevet in that way? Good question. I don't know the answer to that one. Answers on a postcard, please, if you still have any postcards at home. We can talk about it next time. Let's go on a little bit. I just want to bring you one last source on this topic, which is number six. I just saw that wrong. Number six, on the bottom of the sheet here, where there is a Rabbeinu Chananel that says this is called a nes. If a woman becomes pregnant from an ambati, from a bath, this is not a normal way of getting pregnant. And there are those sources that just dismiss this entire suggestion and say, no. The Gemara raised that as a possibility, but it's not realistically something that we're choshish for. One of the proofs for that, by the way, is the Mishnah Lemelech brings down, I think it's the Mishnah Lemelech, that if a woman who is an arusa, this is not directly related, but she's already betrothed and therefore halachically married, but not together with her husband. If we discover that she's pregnant, the halacha says for sure she had a relationship and the child is a mamzer, to the point that the child is allowed to marry another mamzer, a mamzeret. So he says if we're worried about people getting pregnant in the bath, Why are we so quick to say that the child is a mamzer? It's clear that we're obviously not worried about that, because otherwise we'd say, oh, who knows? Maybe she had the bath experience. But Rabbeinu Chananel says, it's a maisa nisim. Look at what he says. V'zeh maisa nisim hu ve'eina tamea leida. She's not, even when she gives birth to this baby is a magical baby, is a miraculous baby. She doesn't even become tumah yoledet, she'ein ani koreba isha ki tazria. Because the whole issue of tumah, when a woman gives birth, is related to the question, is she was mazria zera. She had a normal conception and this not. Why is that important? So if you remember, we had a number of shirim about Brit Milah. And there is a major question as to whether you can push aside Shabbat for a Brit on Shabbat, for a baby that was born on Shabbat, if the baby was born from artificial insemination or conceived from artificial insemination. Because if the woman did not become Tameya Yoledet, then you cannot push off the Brit. You cannot push off Shabbat to do the Brit on Shabbat, because the two things are related. And if you remember, we had a discussion about that, and this has been a real question in the posting. But we're going a little bit off the topic. Let's move on with our own topic. So yes, let's assume that there is paternity. But that's when the father is alive. Is it possible to halachically father a child after the father is already dead? This is a new question. This is a new stage beyond everything that we've talked about so far. Normally with IVF, the father is very much alive and the child is conceived. But in this case, we're talking about a child, where the father had passed away. So let's have a look. For this, we need a tshuva of the Nodi B'Yehuda. This is a fascinating tshuva. Let's look at this in detail. Number 7. Says the Nodi B'Yehuda, Aldava Ha'isha, there was a woman, Behikila Kadosha Gidong. I'm not sure where Gidong is. I assume it's in Eastern Europe somewhere. He's in the 1700s in Eastern Europe here. Ashesh Sha'ata Imba'ala, Sheva Shanim. She lived with her husband for 7 years. Velo Yalda, but they had no children together. When he, the husband, became sick, deadly sick, and this was the sickness he eventually died from. She went to the mikveh, the woman went to the mikveh, Gimel Yamim Lifnei Motov, 3 days before the husband died. Ukfa Hichbid Acholim Ma'od, he was already very sick. Vagam Da'ato Lo Haita Miyushevet Kokach, and he wasn't even so lucid. Miroiv Acholim, because he was so sick already, Nebach. Ube Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan, on Erev Rosh Chodesh, Meit HaBaal, the husband passed away. V'chaim l'chol chai shevak, and he left all other living creatures. He went to the next world. V'hiniach et ha'kotten ben shloish ha'shanim. Thank you. Very important. He left a younger brother, who was 3 years old. Okay? Now you know what's coming next, right? There's going to be a yivum shaila. This woman has died. The husband had no children. There's a little brother. He's only 3. She's got to wait 10 years until the brother can grow up to do chalitza. So what's the question here? We assumed when the woman died that she's going to have to wait for the brother. She died without children. For this little brother. And indeed, a couple of weeks after the husband died, a period came again. So that's the end of that. But then the next Adar, Yalda Bat, she had a little girl. The habat chayta yotei mishloshim yom, and the girl was a kayemet. She was a child that actually survived. Okay, the al yidei leidat habat hazeh ha'almana mecheskas atzma becheskas heta l'shuk. Okay, ha'almana mecheskas atzma lecheskas heta l'shuk. So now we turn around and says, well, 1 second. This woman is not waiting for a yavam. This woman is not waiting for the little brother. Baruch Hashem, the dead husband has a child. And therefore she can go off and get married. We thought there were no children, but look, she has a child. Where else could this child have come from? Okay, so you could turn around and say, well, maybe the woman was unfaithful to her husband. Or not unfaithful, the husband had died already. Maybe she had a relationship with someone a few weeks later, and the baby was premature. What's that? So we're going to see. He's not asking about the bath. He's not asking about the bath. So let's just, in the middle of this tshuva, just take a pause for a second and raise a halacha. Look at the Shulchan Aruch number 8. This is, we're just in the middle of this tshuva. It says the Shulchan Aruch. Hayivama lo tilchotz. a woman who is left as a yevama, husband died, no children. She doesn't do chalitza, but lot titiyabem, and she doesn't do yibam. We don't do yibam at all these days, mostly, but she doesn't do either. Ad sheyu tishim yom mimisa sabal. We wait for 90 days after the husband died. Chutz miyom mimisa, aside from the day that he died, v'yom yibam uchalitza, and apart from the day of the yibam uchalitza. Why are we waiting 3 months? To see if she's pregnant. Maybe she's already a month or so in pregnancy, and we'll only know 3 months later if she's pregnant. If she's pregnant, then the husband has a child, she can bear the child, and then in due course, she can marry somebody else. Okay, she may have to wait still, but not for the yava. So it goes on the Nodib Yehuda. He says, but I've got a problem with this 90-day rule. And here is the kicker. Number 9. How could we allow this woman to go and get married only 3 months, 90 days, after her husband died? Maybe she had relations with her husband just before he died, and she hadn't yet become pregnant. There hadn't yet been conception. Conception can occur a number of days after they have a relationship. Maybe that was in the works, if you like. And it's 90 days is not enough, because it's not 3 months. Because the actual conception happened 3 or 4 days after he died. So we should be waiting 3 months plus 3 or 4 days. Mizman ubra, v'lo huka ubra, and we don't know if she's pregnant. 3 months is not enough. Eich pogeh besofik eishis ish, deshema mu'uberisi. How can we allow her to go off and get married to somebody else because we say, oh, she's not pregnant? We don't know. You didn't wait long enough. You waited 30 days, 90 days, 3 months. Should have been 93 days. Because maybe there's just that little chance that she got pregnant after the husband died. From the husband. V'haya lola hamtin tzadi gimel yon. She should have waited 93 days. V'kushi zuch chamura ma'od. He said, I'm really bothered by this question. And in a minute you'll see he's really bothered why he thinks he's the first person to ask this question. Because how can I, he says, in the 1700s, be the first person to raise this question? But isn't it a question? How can a woman be released to get married if we don't know if she conceived after the husband died? And he's going to suggest that it may be that a baby conceived after the husband died doesn't count. That's not called a child for the purposes of Yibum.
So how did they know after 90 days that she was pregnant?
So the assumption was after 90 days we would see that she was visibly pregnant, etc. That was the Drabonim. Chazal made a rule of 90 days. Okay, some women show earlier, some women show later. They made a rule of 90 days. After 90 days, if she doesn't know she's pregnant, we assume she's not pregnant.
Menstruation
is not necessarily the key here. There are women who menstruate and they are pregnant. There are women who don't menstruate and they're not pregnant. Menstruation is not the key here. And they wait 3 months. So now let's have a look at what he answers. Look at number 10. The Amarati Bilibi. I said to myself the following. Hein emet sheba Torah ksiv. Doesn't it say in the Torah, umeis echad mehem ubein ein lo? And the husband dies, one of the brothers die, and he doesn't have a child. We know that if he leaves his wife pregnant, this deceased brother, Mikri Yeshla, that's called he does have a child. Just because the woman's pregnant, we don't say, oh, no children. No, there's a child. You wait, she's going to give birth. We'll see if the baby is a viable baby. And then we'll know the dead brother had a baby. We wait even though there is a pregnancy, she's not yet given birth. Im noled achakach, if she then gives birth, mikri lemafreya, we know in retroactively, yesh la ben, the dead husband had a child. Aval im b'shas moisa loy haita afinu mulberis, but if she's not pregnant when the husband dies, b'vavai im haya ba'oisa shah etzel hanovi, let's say she went to a novi. We had a local Orthodox prophet, and she went on the day of her husband's death after he died, and she said to the novi, am I pregnant? Meaning the only reason we wait 3 months is because we don't have Naviyim. If we had Nevi'im, then, we wouldn't need to wait 3 months. Now, you are saying we have blood tests today. Do we still need to wait 3 months? That's a different shit. That's not today. The Omer, the prophet would say, Einu mu'uberet, she's not pregnant, I can tell you from prophecy. Haitza muteris bo'isa shali yavam. Then she would be allowed to, she would be perfectly permitted, okay? There's no child. She would be allowed to do Yibam right away. The loy have asrin oisimitam herayon. We wouldn't be worried she's pregnant. She's a kabela chakach. We wouldn't be worried that she got pregnant later. She's not pregnant from the husband. Ilavi sura drabon and sheosrin torkimel. Except for the drabon, we say we have to wait 90 days because we don't have a novi. We have to wait and see. But if there was a Navi, he would tell us she's not pregnant. Shkayach. The Imkain, Ani Omer, I want to claim, he says, Isha Shaloi Kalta Hazera, that a woman who was not yet conceived, Koidem Misas Bala, before the husband died, Af Shekalta Achamoise, even though she conceives after the husband dies, Ubenoi Hulachal Davar, and like we just said before, it is his son. He is the father. Just because he conceived in an unusual way, he is the father. He wants to stay, even though he's dead. Mikol Mokum Le'inyan Yibum. I want to claim that Yibum might be different. Kfar Karinam Ba. We already call this case Bain En Ben En Ein Lo. He doesn't have a son. B'shas Misa Obas Yibum He. And she has to go to the Yibam. So interesting. She has to do Yibum, and yet it turns out the husband had a child. He said the two things in this very unusual case don't get together. Just need to go on a little bit. Got a lot to do here. We're already on page 3. Ulefize Im Havlad Noilad Achatesha. And therefore, I'm going to tell you if the child was born after 9 months. We have to be concerned. Maybe the mother still has to do chalitza. There's a living, breathing child, but maybe she had relations just before the man died, and we have to be concerned that it's not a child for Yibum. Okay, I'm going to say most women don't have relations with their husband on the day that the husband dies. Okay, if the husband's sick, but you know, it could happen. You're right, it can happen. God forbid, there could be an accident. It wasn't expected. Could happen. The afidu shimish boy beyon or beyon akodim. Even if she had relations on that day, the day before, mikol makom gam kodim she came shimish. She had relations before that. Generally, the tolinim beroy beilas akodemis, and we don't assume that the pregnancy was from this last little relationship. Aval, but. But let's say a woman says, I had relations with my husband on the 28th of Iyar. The Chavted Iyar mate, and on the 29th he died. The Kaidim Chavchet, and before the 28th, she hadn't had relations with him at all for weeks. There was the only possibility is that it came from this relationship just before he died. What are we going to say? So he says at the end of the line, V'im kein yesh l'chush, therefore I really am worried. Shema niklat hazera acha moisa shalabal. Maybe the fertilization happened, the conception happened after the husband died. V'im kein sricha chalitza. And it's not a child for Yibum. It's his child, but it's not a Yibum child. I want to separate the two. Ela, he says, shelefi hadava zeh dava chadash. But this is a very new idea. The loy matzina b'shum paisek, and I've never seen it anywhere else. It actually is somewhere else. It's in the Marasha, tucked away. Maybe he didn't have that Marasha. Who discusses it before him? Because we can make up new cases. We're going to make a new halacha la'amsi chumra chadasha. We're going to make a new chumra. This is a chumra. There's a husband who died and left a child, and he says, but still the wife needs to do chalitza. The husband has a child. It was a posthumous conception child. And therefore, I'm not going to make new chumras. The Gamal Pi Arova Zera Nikla Bashas Ika Tashmish. And also, it could be that she, even if she had relations the day before, maybe conception was more or less immediate. It can happen as well. And therefore, I'm going to set my chumra aside. And he's going to say, Sof Dava, bottom line, Ha'isha Hazot Muteret B'li Chalitza. He said, I'm not going to be machmer. I only raise this as a question, as a theoretical question. I'm not going to make her do chalitza, okay, and she's mutter to marry even a kohen, even without chalitza. But this got everybody thinking. What does this mean? How does this impact on our case? It could be, according to this chidush, that a woman who conceives after the husband has died, it's not actually for all purposes. The child, the Rebbe Yehuda wanted to say, you know, maybe it's not a child for Yibum. But he was concerned, well, maybe she did conceive, maybe she didn't. But if we have a case of posthumous sperm retrieval, the woman conceives years after the husband died. It's night and day. So this chidush of the Rebbe Yehuda could be very important. Yes, very quickly, sir.
It was started right away that the husband was sick. And couldn't have a relationship with her husband, with his wife.
We thought, we didn't know, we assumed.
So therefore, this so Rav Salavati would say, go through it and figure out what the story is trying to tell. It's not always exactly the story, but the initial definition is that he couldn't have a...
Yeah, but we thought that he couldn't. It turned out maybe he could. We never know. Maybe she did, maybe she says she did. She says she did, and we believe her. We don't assume that she's lying. Let's go on a little bit. So... can things happen after a person dies that affect their halachic status? Can you become a father after you die? How does that work? There is an interesting case which I'm going to just talk about very briefly in the middle of page 4, sources number 13 and 14, I should say, where an unusual case. Let's say a man, Rahman al-Islam, raped a young girl. He says that Sarah has to pay her a penalty fine. If the girl dies before she's... if the girl is less than 12 and a half, it goes to the father. If the girl is over 12 and a half, it goes to the girl. So what happens, he said, if there was this attack and the girl was, God forbid, raped, and then she died before she was 12 and a half. So the Gemara raises the possibility that even after she's already died, we still keep counting the calendar to 12 and a half, even though she's never going to reach 12 and a half now, because she died when she was 12. But when she reaches 12 and a half, we say, oh, she would have got it now, so it goes to her other relatives, not to the father. Maybe she had a child from before that she inherit, that inherits from the mother. And therefore, there is this whole discussion in the Gemara here as to whether the clock remains ticking. Even though a person has passed away, are there halachic realities that can be formed? In this case, the issue of who gets this fine after the girl has already died. So you see there are interesting cases there as to how far indeed we take this. Let's talk a little bit about Yibum. Go over to page 5. The Gemara says, when it comes to Yibum, and there are interesting implications here, look in number 17. Hakonis es Yibintoi, someone who marries his sister-in-law because of Yibum, Zacha ben Echasim Shalechav, he inherits all the brother-in-law's, the dead brother-in-law's property, goes to this new husband who has come in to do Yibum. Why? Number 18. Hakonis es Yibintoi, this is the Gemara, my timer, Yokum al Shem Achiv. He is stepping into the name of his brother-in-law, of his brother, I should say. The dead husband that the wife was married to had no children. Amar Achmana, and therefore the Torah, Sarah says, okay, he has to step into the brother's shoes. Baharikam, and now he steps into the brother's shoes and he's perpetuating the name of the brother. What happens if the wife is pregnant? So then we wait. We said before, look at number 19. Let's say the guy jumps the gun and he says, I'm not waiting. Okay, I'm not waiting to see if the widow is pregnant. I'm going to do chalitza right now. I want to get on with it. Says the Gemara. Ha-chalitza li-yavimto. Someone does chalitza. The nimsa mu-beret. And it turns out she's pregnant. But yalda, and then she has a child. So she never needed the chalitza. She could have got married to somebody else. There's a child. Bizman she-avlad shal-kaima. If it's a viable child. Hu mutzer b'kroveseh v'hi mutzeris b'krovav. The chalitza was a nothing. We don't say, oh, well, you performed chalitza, maybe there are halachic implications to that. No, 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 you jumped the gun, you did a chalitza, it wasn't necessary, it turns out the woman's pregnant, the thing just basically is a non-entity. Well, I pass over hakuna, and she's not in any way invalid to kohuna, she didn't do anything wrong, he didn't do anything wrong. Or he did something he didn't need to do. So, ain avlad shel kaima, but what if we don't know if the child is viable? How long are you going to wait to check? Let's say she has a baby. But the baby's sickly. Oh, I don't know, the baby's on an incubator, the baby's still sick. How long are we going to wait to see if there is indeed a case of chalitza that's needed here? So let's see what it says. Ein avlad shel kaima, hu asur b'krovaseh v'hi asura b'krovav, u'psula min hakohuna. So if the child turns out in the end not to be viable, then the chalitza was a valid chalitza. Even though he jumped the gun, there was a chalitza necessary. So the Gemara says, what is the reason for this? Number 20, itma. Hachonitz lemu berit vehipila. Let's say that he does chalitza to this pregnant woman, but she never has a miscarriage. Reish Lakish, Amar Reish Lakish says, no, tzricha chalitza menachim, she needs another chalitza. Reish Lakish tavik, because she says, and here's the key, bein ein lo. The Pasuk says she's only exempt if there is no child. Ein lo. Says the Gemara, ayin alav. He uses this word ein with an aleph and says, as if it's been written with an ayin, because it could have been written without the yud. You can look into why the drash happens. We need to do some iyun. We can't just jump the gun on this. We need to do proper iyun. What's proper iyun? Look into Sosfos in 21. Shela tilchas, she shouldn't do chalitza, v'loiti nasin, she shouldn't marry anyone else. Kals man she omedit besofek. Besofek. If there's still a sofek, then she can't do chalitza. Because there's a suffix, and we need to find out. The baby's sick, will it live, will it not? Says the Ramban at the end, number 22, Lama shelo tilchotz v'lo titiaven v'lo tinaseh, she can't do anything, ad she neide ma yihye besofa. What's going to be besofa, in the end? In the end, if we still have a situation which is hanging, we don't know what's going to be in the end. So now let's go back to our case. We have a sperm sample stored in a hospital. And the husband died, and there are no other children. And she says, well, you know, what do I do? So there's a brother waiting to do chalitza, but maybe she doesn't need chalitza. Because she says that she could have a child. How long are we going to wait? And in fact, there are those who want to suggest that Rav Moshe Sternbuch says this, and Rav Eliyashu said this, that indeed, as long as there is a sperm sample in the hospital, she is in limbo. There's nothing she can do. She can't get married. She can't do chalitza. She doesn't know what's going on because we just don't know what the situation is. And obviously, this is a very negative situation for the woman to be in. How long are we going to wait? How long do you come to... I spoke this week to an embryologist. And I said, how long can they freeze these samples? She goes, they can freeze them forever. But there comes a point when it starts to cost a lot of money. And the hospitals are going to say, either you pay a lot of money or we're going to, you know, throw it away. And the person, but if the person's prepared to pay, they'll go forever. On the other hand, other persons say, no, you can't leave a woman an aguna forever. How long are you going to wait? There is a parallel case in the Gemara, which is in number 23, which I'll just mention, which is, let's say a woman, the husband died, and he leaves a child. And she says, okay, there's no yibum necessary, there's no chalitza necessary, there's a child. But then 10 years later, Nebuch, the child dies. Do we turn back the clock and say, ah, well, it turned out the child died. And therefore, you did really need to do a chalitza because there is no child now. And the Gemara rejects that. And it says, why? Because then you'll never know your status. Good, but that's not what the Gemara says. Because they got, again, Elo means I in a love. We have to investigate. We can't be too quick. We have to know, is there going to be a child? Is there not going to be a child? The Gemara says no. Because there's a possibility that says, Drachea darchei noam, the ways of the Torah are pleasant. V'chol nesiva seha shalom. We're never going to leave a woman hanging that she's waiting all her life in case, God forbid, the child that was left dies, and then retroactively she has to do yibum. We're not going to allow that. And therefore, there are many poskim that say this will apply here too. We're not going to allow her to be in limbo just because there's a sperm sample in the hospital. She's never going to know, am I allowed to get married? Am I not allowed to get married? Do I need to do chalitza? Do I not need to do chalitza? We're not going to allow that. I do need to go on. I don't want to lose so much time. But that's a very important point. So there we have a dispute amongst the poskim. If a woman has a situation where there is a preserved sperm sample of the husband, and yet there is a brother who could do chalitza, what do we allow? Do we say that she has to wait until we eventually know what's going to happen with this sample? So says a minority of poskim. Majority of poskim, I think, is a majority say, no, we're not going to leave her in limbo. If, as you said, if there is not a child right now, we're going to say that she's not going to be in a chalitza situation, or rather she is, we can do a chalitza, and we can move on, there is no child right now, and we can get on with it. What about inheritance? I mentioned this at the end of last week. What happens if the man dies, the soldier dies, a millionaire, and leaves all his property to his little brother? Okay? There's no one else. It's just a little brother. Or a big brother. Any brother. Okay? And then there are these sperm samples sitting in the hospital. And then 5 years later, the wife says, you know something? I want to go ahead with it. And they produce twins. And now these two little boys come along and say, well, that's actually our money. Our money that you took 5 years ago, the $1 million belongs to us. $500,000 each. And the brother says, well, I'm sorry, I spent it, you know? Are they going to sue him? Does he have to give it back? And actually, you'd be surprised to hear that many, many poskim say, no, this child that is born later is indeed the child for all inheritance purposes as well. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and I brought you some psakim here, and I'm going to read them all inside. You can do this for your homework. In number 24, Rav Shlomo Zalman, and this is underlined by Rav Halperin, who explains his psak this way too, says that no, if a baby is produced from PSR, from the sperm retrieval, they are the halachic child of the deceased, definitely, and they do inherit from the husband, but he says, but for technical reasons, they're not the child for Yibum, and therefore the woman can go along and do what she needs to do at the time, she doesn't have to wait, but he separates the two. However, you should know, and I brought you page number 7, source 26, Rav Shaul Yisraeli. Rav Shaul Yisraeli was a very major posik. He was the Rosh Hashiva in Merkez Arav. He was the head posik for Eretz Chemda. He ruled differently, and he said, you know something? I actually hold that these things cannot be separated. You cannot be a child for inheritance and not a child for Yibum. It's all or nothing. And he actually ruled that the child of a post mortem insemination, this post-mortem, was not the halachic child on any level of this person who gave the sperm. Not for inheritance, not for yibum, and not even for forbidden relationships. Meaning this child was completely halachically unrelated to the soldier or whoever gave the sperm, to the point that they could even marry the soldier's relative because they were not halachically connected at all. And Rav Moshe Sternbuch agreed with that. And he says that only a living person can acquire a new halachic status. You can't become a father, you can't become a child, you can't become something new in halacha after a person has died. And therefore, there were many poskim that took this view that actually held. And if that's the case, according to Rosh Hashanah Israeli, and people are taking these samples and saying, well, I want to produce a child who can, you know, give a hemshech, etc. It's not the child. Interestingly, in British law, when this was first permitted in 1990, the courts, or rather the legislation in the UK, ruled that the child of the sperm donor was not the child. The way the psak of Rav Yisraeli. And that was changed around 5-10 years ago, and now the law in England is that they are the child. They are allowed to be registered as the child. So there's been a kind of flim-flam, there's been a back and forth in the legislation there. But you see this too, Lahavdil, in the issues here with Rav Yisraeli, who says that they're not the child, and Rav Shlomo Zalman, who says that they are the child. And therefore there is a really major debate on this in the halacha. What about pruravu? Do they have to be the child in order to do pruravu? And the answer is not so simple. I brought you a few cases here. What about a convert who converts to Judaism and they already have a child? Look in source number 28. Hayolo banim. This man has a child. Biyosa oved kochavim, and he used to be a non-Jew. V'nidgayer, and then he becomes a Jew. Does he fulfill the mitzvah? Rabbi Yochanan Omer, ki imperia rivya. He's done the mitzvah pruravu. Reish Lakish Amar, like Kim Peri Rivia, Reish Lakish says he's not done the mitzvah Peri Rivia. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Kim Peri Rivia, the Havile, because he has there are human beings in the world now because he produced them. Okay, they're not Jewish, and he is Jewish, and they're not his children. Everybody agrees that they're not his children because he's now like a newborn because he's converted. Doesn't matter. Rabbi Yochanan says they are, nevertheless, if you leave people behind, they are, you fulfill the mitzvah of pru or avu, even if they're not your children. So even if we say that the sperm sample produces a human being who is not the halachic child, that doesn't mean that they didn't do pru or avu. Have a look in number 30. The Rambam brings this down. Have a lo banim begiusa. Let's say he has children when he's a non-Jew. The nitgayer, and then he converts. Huve heim. He says, but they have to convert too. Harizei kiyam mitzvah zo. Then he did the mitzvah. Meaning, is the mitzvah puravu to leave children? Is it to leave Jewish children? Is it to leave your children? So the Rambam says, it's to leave children. They don't have to be your children, but they do have to be Jewish. Other people say, no, I brought you the Ma'aril that says, no. Even if they're not Jewish. But not only do they not have to be your children, they don't even have to be Jewish children. So you see, when it comes to Pru Ravu, there is a very major debate here as to whether you need to actually be connected with the children to do Pru Ravu, and that really impacts on our case. What about in our scenario? Rav Bakshi Doron said, for example, let's say you have an unmarried soldier that passed away, and you say, we'd like him to do the mitzvah of Pru Ravu.
Dead person.
First of all, can a dead person do the mitzvah puravu? And second of all, was he obligated in the mitzvah puravu? When is a person obligated to do puravu? A man to do puravu, a woman in the rabbinic side of the mitzvahs, when they get married. Meaning, in theory, a child a little boy age 13, is obligated in the mitzvah puravu. Why don't we say to every bar mitzvah boy, yashar koach, enjoy your bar mitzvah presents, but clock's ticking. Puravu. Okay? You've got to produce children. I mean, he'll probably be quite happy with that, but we're not going to allow that. We're not going to allow that. Why? Because we say that the mitzvah puravu only comes about when a person is married. Why? And this is actually very important, because according to many Mephoroshim, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, the mitzvah puravu is not to actually have children. It's to be in a Jewish marriage and to try to have children. That's the mitzvah. And I brought this to the tshuva of Rav Moshe, a very famous tshuva. He says, no one's obligated to actually leave children. They're obligated to try. Look at number 33. I brought you the Gemara that is very, very much germane here. Amar Rava, the Gemara says, B'shashim machnisim Adam. When they bring you in, Ladin, to the based in Shalmal, after 120 years, Amar Rava, they say to you, Asakta b'piri arivya. They don't say, did you have kids? Did you leave kids? They say, did you try? And that's the mitzvah. And therefore, there are many poskim that will say, we're not trying to help this dead soldier, Rahman al-Islam, to do pururavu. He didn't have the mitzvah. Now, maybe it's different if he was married with a wife and they were trying to do pururavu. Rav Moshe will say, he already did the mitzvah. You don't need to help him do the mitzvah. He did this mitzvah already because the mitzvah is to do the best you can to have children. There's an interesting discussion of the Minchas Chinuch. The Minchas Chinuch says that pururavu, actually, he doesn't hold like Rav Moshe. He says it's to leave children when a person dies, to leave children behind. But you don't actually have to do a maisa to have the children, and therefore it could be the posthumous children would work according to the Minchas Chinuch, but I'm not getting into that too much now. There's also a Gemara that talks about Yirmiyahu Anavi. I brought you in 34 Yeshua ben Nun, not Yirmiyahu, when he brought the army together overnight unnecessarily, and the angel, remember, with a sword appears to him and says, Yeshua, you've done a terrible thing. And he says, what have I done? Chazal says that the angel told him, you have stopped people for a night unnecessarily from doing the mitzvah of pururavu. So according to that, like Rav Moshe says, what's the mitzvah of pururavu? He didn't necessarily stop people from having children. He stopped them from being in a relationship with each other, and therefore that is what we call the mitzvah of pururavu. And therefore, before we start getting into a discussion as to we're trying to help the soldier, whoever it is, to do pururavu, we have to ask ourselves, what really is the mitzvah of pururavu? Is it just to have children? Is it to try to have children? Does there need to be a maisa mitzvah? Or does there not need to be a maisa mitzvah, etc.? The Minchas Chinuch actually raises the case, if it needs an action to do pururavu, then why, if a person has a mamzer, is that still called pururavu? Why do we say it's a mitzvah haba ba'aveira and it doesn't count? So as you see, you don't actually have to have a maisa. The person doesn't have to actually do an act to produce the child. It could be the insemination works as well. Rav Asher Weiss, you should know, 36, he says there is no question whatsoever that even if you produce a child from the sperm, he does not do the mitzvah pururavu. There is no mitzvah pururavu here. Look what he says, number 36. Dava shele b'bachor. He's talking about a single man. And he'd had chemotherapy. To our great sadness, Hatipulo Allah, it didn't work. Allah Yafed, the treatment didn't work. He requested his relatives to use his sperm. He wasn't married, he was a bachor. He asked to find a regular single woman, on a sawa, or even a married woman. He wanted to leave a child, he wanted to have a child after him. Should we do what he asked? So he says, "Hine ze pashut." It is so obvious. What's bayasa b'chutcha? It's an egg in milk. It's an expression in the Gemara that is seen as being the most obvious shaila in the world. Am I allowed to boil an egg in milk, or is the egg fleishik? You don't have to be a great Talmid Chacham to know that eggs are parav. Okay, so that's the example given in the Gemara of the most basic halakhic question in the world. Okay, there are those who want to say that it can't be so basic, like everyone knows that eggs are paraf. Could be if you kill a chicken and you open up the chicken and you find an egg inside the chicken, like a fully formed egg, is that paraf? Okay, that's a different question. But he says this is as obvious can be, she'ein hanifta mekayim bezeh mitzvahs pru uravu. He did not fill a mitzvah. Why? Dekeven shemes adam. Because once a person dies, and this would apply across the board to all our cases, nase chof shivin a mitzvahs. When a person dies, they no longer have any connection to mitzvahs. Ve'ein adam makai mitzvah la'acha moisa. You cannot do a mitzvah after you die. Ve'ein zet toile chlau b'mashenech l'ku achroni b'dav a mitzvah zo im hi ma'aseh habir. It doesn't matter whether you say pruravu is the act of the relationship, or be'etzim heyosel obanim, or the fact that you left children behind. That's a nice question. It's irrelevant. A person has died. They do not have any ability to do mitzvahs anymore. We call Markum Barura Pashut. It's absolutely clear. The Afima mitzvah mitkayemet b'masha yesh labanim. Even if you want to argue that a person does the mitzvah puravu by leaving children, not by having children, ein ze elab chayav, that's only when they're alive. V'lola achamoseh, a child born after the person died is not relevant. When we talk pshitas ein tzarech la'arik b'zeklal, I don't even need to tell you anymore because it's so obvious. So again, Not at all obvious that you did a mitzvah. Not obvious that he's the child of the father. Not obvious that it's pru revu if you produce a posthumous child. A few other issues and then we'll draw it to a close. What about people getting pregnant when they're not married? Are we worried that that's a problem? Women who are getting pregnant and they're not married because they're having an insemination from this sample. There is a discussion about this. There are various suggestions. There are rabbonim that say this is a concern. We'll be concerned that people might become more immoral, etc. Because people will say, well, it's fine. She got pregnant in a way which was okay. Other people will get pregnant in a way which is not so okay. Okay, that's not clear halachically. There are specific cases in the Gemara, for example, it says a man may not sleep with his wife after he's written her a get, even if he didn't deliver it yet. Why? Because he may sit in the cupboard, not delivered for 3, 4, 5, 6 months, and then they'll have a baby, and then he'll deliver the get, and they'll assume the date on the get was when she really got divorced, and not realize that actually the divorce only happened later, and we don't want people to raise questions as to the legitimacy of the child, etc. So that's a specific case. To apply that across the board in all cases, not so straightforward, and many places can say, you can't just use that as a general rule and say that we're not happy for single women to become pregnant because there's more to it than that. What about the mother's state of mind? Do we say, well, a mother should not be allowed to make that decision, or a grandparent should not be allowed to make that decision because they may come to regret it? Do we say that we wait until people have had a kind of cooling off period? Rav Bornstein, the Rosh Hashiva of Pua, says he had a case to discuss with Rav Mordechai Eliyahu of a woman who had sperm from her husband who died from an illness. And after the husband died, she asked him, should I have a baby from the child, from the husband? And he said, wait 2 years. Wait 2 years to decide if you really want to. Meaning, if she does it now, she's a young woman, she has no other children, maybe she'll regret it. Maybe she'll say, I should have moved on. I should have realized that my husband died, Nebuch, and I needed to start a new life. Now I've got this child, and now I regret. See, he told her to wait 2 years. Is that a halachic requirement? No, it's not a halachic requirement. But it may be relevant that a person may come to regret things afterwards. And I brought you various other cases. There are halachic precedents for ignoring a person's immediate wishes on the basis that they'll regret it later. For example, we say that if a person needed an amputation and they opposed it and they said they'd had a horrendous accident, God forbid, and they said, you can't do it, I won't let you, I'd rather die, we put the person under, do the amputation, and they'll be saying, because you weren't thinking straight. You know, afterwards you'll thank us for having done this because at the time you weren't able to make that. That doesn't necessarily carry over into our case in all respects, or maybe even in any respects, but that's a question. What about planned orphanhood? Some people turn around and say, look, it's a terrible thing to be an orphan. We say the Gemara, that the Pesukim number 37 says, Kol almana v'yasayim lo ta'anun, you're not allowed to afflict or to oppress orphans, widows. Rashi explains, because orphans are in a very, a compromised position. They don't have people to fight for them. They're often abused by other people. They're taken advantage of. Why would you bring an orphan into the world? Okay, if there is a sad case, we have enough orphans in the world. And even if you know that the person's going to be an orphan, if there's a marriage, you wouldn't say you can't bring a child. For example, some people say to Poskim, what if the husband and wife knew that the husband would only live another month or two? Are they allowed to have relationships in order to bring a child into the world? And they would say, yes, of course they can. I mean, they're a husband and wife. They're allowed. Isn't that a planned orphan? What can you do? They're a married couple. They have a mitzvah, peru, revu. God runs the world. But here in this case, to bring an orphan, lechatchila, into the world, knowing that there will be no father living with the child, is that allowed or is that not allowed? And I actually brought you three Datinumi Rabbonim here, number 38, 39, and 40, which I'm not going to read specifically. Rav Ariel, Rav Yaakov Ariel, Rav Dov Lior, and Rav Nachum Rabinowitz. Maybe just let's look at Rav Nachum Rabinowitz, known in many ways as a mekel in many halachic areas. Look at Rav Nachum Rabinowitz in number 40. He says, L'chatchil l'havi yelet, to bring a child into the world, lachatchila, she'ein lo abba, who has no living father, maybe even no halachic father, because we don't even know if the father is the halachic father we saw before, even if we think he is. Zehu aval gadol. Aval gadol, it's a very bad, it's a terrible thing to do to someone. Lefa'amin korish she'aba ne'erag rachmana letzlan. Sometimes you find that the father is never killed. V'yesh harbe yisomim, there's enough orphans already in the world. That we can't do anything about. People, that happens. It's a terrible thing to do to a child. On the other hand, there's always another hand. Maybe if you ask the child 50 years later, 20 years later, are you happy that you're alive? What's he going to say? I mean, there are always people in the world who are not happy about anything. But we assume that a person would say, you know, looking back on it, would you rather not have existed than rather exist? Would you rather not have been born? It's a strange question to ask. The Gemara, don't forget, says, Noach la'adam shaloi nivra. It would have been easier not to have been born. It's an often misquoted Gemara. People said, Yitayv la'adam shaloi nivra. It would have been better. No, it's not what it says. It said it would have been easier. Yes, it would have been easier. Life is a big struggle. It would have been a lot easier not to have had to do the struggle. But would it have been better? So how are you going to... I just have a minute left. I'm sorry. I'll take a question afterwards. How are you going to argue that? It's very difficult to know. So you can't come down one way or the other on that question. It really depends on the particular case. On the last couple of pages, just to show you what's there, and you can look at it on your own, I brought you in F, the spirit of Yibum or a departure from Jewish family values. Some people say, well, this is like Yibum, right? We bring a child into the world to step into the shoes of the dead relative. Okay, that sounds nice, that sounds very noble, and it's done, obviously, l'shem shemayim by the people who are doing it, but it's not the same as Yibum. And I brought you four or five differences. With Yibum, the child grows up with two biological parents, a mother and a father, who brings them up. And in this case, with the sperm retrieval, the child will never have a living biological father. In Yibum, the widow is able to marry and have support from her new husband, from her parents-in-law, from her first husband, and from her second husband, the same parents-in-law. There's emotional support, etc. In this particular case, there may not be in the same way. In Yibum, there's a real connection with the deceased because the child is raised by his brother and his widow. In PSR, it could be the child is raised by a random woman who says, I agree to have this soldier's child. What connection does she have with the deceased? In Yibum, a child is born through a kedusha, through an intimate relationship between a husband and wife, which is a mitzvah. With PSR, that mitzvah is lacking. And also in Yibum, mystically, the child steps into the, if you like, a Gilgal. As the Ramban explains, he's a reincarnation of the dead brother who was unable to perform mitzvahs in life because he died young. In our case, who says that this child is a Gilgal of the dead soldier? And who says that they needed to perform any more mitzvahs? The reason we allow Yibum is because the dead husband died before having been able to fulfill their potential. And as we said last week, a soldier who dies are Kiddush Hashem. There is no higher level of fulfillment of a life's purpose spiritually than that. They don't need our help. They don't need a Gilgal. Mystically speaking, is that a reason which is relevant either? I brought you a little bit on soldiers giving consent, and in case you wanted a bottom line, I gave you on page 12 some conclusions. Okay? As you would expect, they all say different things. I brought you Rav Steinberg 10 years ago, who gives his outline. I brought you Rav Yuval Shurlo, who brings his outline. I brought you here from Tchumim, a very interesting article there by Rav Tzvi Reisman, who brings his criteria. What's maybe interesting to end on is Rav Zev Weitman. Rav Zev Weitman is a very major Pesach. He's the Rav of Tznuva, and therefore a major Kashrus Pesach. He's also the Rav of Ar Yishuv, of Alon Shvut. And in Alon Shvut, we had a family, it's a very public family, that had a soldier, a son, who was Nebach killed, Akidosh Hashem, in Gaza. And there was a very long-term girlfriend of the soldier. They weren't married, but they were on the verge. They had a ring already. He was going to propose to her, and he died. And she spoke at the funeral that they were going to get married, and they never got around to getting married. And she indeed did agree to have the child. And the child has actually been born. There is now a living child, the first one, as far as I'm aware, the only one so far, from this procedure. And they asked a number of different people, and people said different things. And Rav Weitman gave a shir. Rav Weitman was in favor of it must be said. But he gave a shir on it in Noyishuv, and he said, even though he was permissive in that sense, he stressed that there are many, many poskim out there who remained opposed to it. And the matter is absolutely not as simple as some people sometimes suggest. Like, how could you say no to allow the family to do this? Of course, the family is beloved to the yeshuv and supported in every way. And there is now a grandchild who is being raised by that family, I'm sure, in a wonderful, loving environment. But this is a difficult question on which there are no clear answers. I spoke this week, I was at a wedding and I bumped into an embryologist. I mentioned that before. And I asked her, where are we heading on this? So she said, well, while the war was in progress, there was a lot of pressure in the Knesset to bring in clear legislation because this was really pressing. Now that the war's finished, she said, it's been kicked down the road. Like, you know, okay, there are other things that are bothering everybody now. So she said it's a little bit been dropped in terms of the pressure has gone out of it. But as I said at the very beginning of the last week's share, this is an issue that Israel takes very seriously. We believe in family and children, etc. And therefore we will continue to think about it. Okay, I will be away, please God, for 3 weeks now, and therefore I will be back a month from today, please God. In the meantime, there will be some excellent shurim, I'm quite sure of it. So I hope to see you in a month, and we will be near to Hanukkah at that point, and we'll pick it up there.
For coordinating your trip with ours.